What is up, guys? Welcome to the Paneloids comic book live stream, where we talk all things comics every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern time. I'm your host, Pierre. Here, not only Jeremiah, but three very special guests, the creators of Image Comics, The Infernals. This is our first live interviews, guys. So Kyle asked if everyone could introduce themselves and said it would make for better clips.
So if we want to go left to right, so we'll start with Ryan. If you want to introduce yourself and say anything about yourself, and we'll move.
Okay, cool. Line. Yeah, I wasn't sure which is left and right, like stage left and whatever. But I'm Ryan Parrott. I am a comic writer, one of the co-writer of Infernals. I've been writing comic books for 13 years now. I just did the math in my head, and that's a terrifying concept. I've done books like Power Rangers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I've got a book at Image right now called Rogue Sun, and then obviously Infernals. So hi, everybody.
Yeah, I'm Noah Gardner. I'm sort of new to the comics world. I'm a screenwriter for film and television by trade. I've been doing that for about 10 years. This is my first foray into comics. Ryan and I have known each other for a very long time. We actually used to work together. In film and TV, you may have seen a show that my writing partner and I worked on called Calls on Apple TV. We've otherwise written for most of the major studios, I should say. I have a lot of different things in development, and working in comics has been a great joy. So I'm happy to be here.
I'm John Pearson. I've been working in comics for maybe 6 years or so, I think. So I started off self-publishing comics, but then I suppose my kind of big introduction to comics was working on a graphic novel called Blue and Green with Ram V and Anand RK. So I colored that comic book, and I won an Eisner Award with Anand for that. And then after that, I worked on Department of Truth, did some short horror stories in Razor Blades, just did a series at Vault called Mindset, and then I've done a bunch of music-related projects as well with Z2 for bands like Iron Maiden, The Doors, Blondie, and I'm also an illustrator who works with various film, TV properties, doing soundtrack artwork, Blu-ray covers, and I also teach comic books as well here in Leeds in the UK.
That's awesome. I like how it's like exactly split. 13 years, 6 years, newbie. In a sense. It worked out really, really well. So.
Yeah, definitely. It's really cool. So you totally ruined my first question because you guys told me your full life stories and a little bit about your careers in comics. So we're gonna move on to Jeremiah. Jeremiah, take it away. First question. Go.
If you guys could give us two recommendations a piece, whether it be like a movie, a TV show, a comic that you really like, just shoot us out some recommendations for us and our viewers. So again, we'll just start Ryan and go down the line if you don't mind. John, I don't mean to stick you, but
no, I like being in the middle. This is good to see carrot squirm.
Yeah, you just screw it up first every single time. That's awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean to already mess up the questions. I thought that was the introduction was like, because I've done that before. Yep. I've done an introduction and like I just said my name and they're like a little bit more.
I loved it. It was great. It was perfect. I didn't even need the question in this. So it was good.
Awesome.
It's a good thing.
Okay, recommendations. God, I don't have anything clever. I always do the one thing. I really love 100 Bullets by Brian Azzarello. Book is just like, it's the one comic that I just go back to and I can pick up any volume of it and just read it. Like, I love the one in New Orleans with the trumpet player. Like, I just think every one of those has such a unique and interesting tone and style. And then when you get it to, as it evolves and gets crazier and crazier, it all starts to come together in ways that don't make any sense, which is kind of the best part of it. But that's 100 Bullets. And then I always say the Ender's Game series, just because that's my favorite favorite novelizations of all time. My dog's name Ender. So like, those are my
two. That's awesome.
Yes.
I think I'm gonna stick with comics. Maybe I'll throw out Fargo season 5. Right.
Oh
now,
my god, it's so good.
Really?
Which is so good.
Yeah. The moment I'm done with this, I'm going to watch the new episode.
Okay. It's incredible. I loved the first two seasons. The third season kind of lost me a little bit. Obviously it's a terrific piece of television, but I wasn't quite as into it. So I skipped the fourth season, returned for the fifth season. It's unreal, big, sort of mythic. It's Noah Hawley at his best. Love it. Really enjoying it. I've got a few comic recommendations right now. Two books that for me are weirdly, they're so different from each other, but they're both kind of part of the same, you know, two sides of the same coin. One is Monica by Daniel Klaus. I don't know if you guys have read it.
Yes.
It's his new, it's just
his new graphic novel. Well,
his new graphic novel that is, you know, long gestating, and I think kind of in a career filled with masterpieces, the most recent one. Beautiful, surreal, awesome story. So that I have to recommend. And then I also just read, which I think I'm probably the last one to read, but 20th Century Men by Dennis Camp, which is just an image book. Also this big sweeping story, the sort of alt history, unbelievably powerful use of the medium. So those are two that I think as uses of comics are about as good as you can get. And then I also want to plug my buddy John Leese's book, The Nasty,
so over good. At Vault, which we is talked
really,
to John.
Which is really rad. I'm glad you talked to John, worked with John. I'm actually adapting one of his properties. I will, you know, hopefully we'll be making a bigger announcement about that later on. He's the best. And then, yeah, he's also crowdfunding Sync right now. So if anybody's reading Sync,
it's a new volume or
incredible. It's I think it's the second issue of their third volume. So they're this is a little different than they've done it in the past. I think they're crowdfunding each of these issues. So that's awesome. And then I also want to plug my buddy Alex Cormick, who's got Drive Like Hell right now at Dark Horse, which is rad, and everybody should check it out. Okay, so that's what I've got.
and now John.
Man, yeah, I don't know what's worse, going first or last. So I mean, in terms of comics, two recent books that I've read that are fantastic would be Spar by Eric Svetoff, came out on Fantagraphics. It's a really weird, terrifying, Lynchian
so good.
Kind of journey. It is, I've never seen anything or read anything like it. It's terrifying and hilarious all at the same time.
If you like The White Lotus and cosmic horror and body horror,
okay,
all put together, spas for you. It's incredible. Yeah. Sorry,
it's amazing. And the other one would probably be A Guest in the House by Emily Carroll. Again, another fantastic horror story. It's weird and creeping, about a ghost in the house. It's a woman who remarries her husband after the death of his previous wife, and it's kind of her questioning why she's there, and then she starts seeing the ghost of the dead wife in the house, and it's just sensational. And it's just turn after turn after turn. Absolutely loved it. They're the two kind of most recent things that I would highly recommend.
See, this is why it sucks to go first, because like you guys are saying really cool things, and I'm like, you know, Batman and Spider-Man, they're amazing.
I mean, but you went with an old Vertigo book, which is that's a good lead into the Infernals.
I said Diet Coke and not Coke.
So if we're doing that as well, then we have to say Preacher as well. I feel like
you have to give that credit.
We're required to. It is the sort of pivotal reference point for us tonally in the Infernals, aesthetically and otherwise. So
and we will get there. We will get there.
Shout out to Preacher. Yeah.
My wife wrote on that TV show. She was a writer on it.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah, very proud of that.
That's really awesome. John, is that all you got, or you want some more stuff? Because I know Ryan interrupted you. I'm not sure if you got any more stuff.
I mean, the other thing I was going to say for kind of recommendations for film would be Suspiria, the original Suspiria, which is probably the biggest artistic influence on what I do for tone and color, which is weird.
With you saying that, I see it so hard now.
Suspiria and Dario Argento, but also a lot of kind of giallo cinema is like the biggest influence on how I do what I do, which is often weird because it's not comics or it's not kind of static medium. But yeah, that's kind of my biggest recommendation, because I feel like a lot of people as well, they've seen the Suspiria remake, but there's still a lot of people that haven't seen the original, and highly recommend it.
the original is definitely a acquired taste in a way, but it is fantastic. An acquired taste. So.
Now, Ryan, would you like to go again? It's up to you. You can go again.
I think I've embarrassed myself enough already, yes.
All right, well, let's get into the thick of it, guys. We're here for one thing, and that's the Infernals. So let's start talking about it. What genre would you categorize the Infernals? Horror, sci-fi, thriller, superheroes? Tell us.
I think you're probably a cheap answer, but I think the beauty of comics in particular is that it does sort of, it's hard to categorize into one genre. And it does sort of, it's a medium that does reward kind of blending as many genres as you can or using genres to kind of complement each other. I would say if we were going to categorize it, I would say that it's a horror book. It's a thriller book. There are elements of family drama. There's elements of corporate intrigue and corporate drama, dark fantasy. So I think that it sits somewhere at the intersection of all of those. But I think that what we've really tried to lean into is this sort of blend of contemporary family drama and with a sort of horror overtones. So that's what I would say we... Yeah. Does that fit on the back of a book?
It's a hell of a blurb. It is a hell of a blurb.
Let image know. Let me ramble for a bit. But I'd say that's, you know, guys, tell me if I'm if there's a more succinct way of classifying it. But I'd say that's kind of our goal.
Yeah, I mean, I thought like corporate family drama with supernatural aesthetics is kind of what I've been sort of pitching it as.
What he said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the fun things about it is because it is hard to categorize, it means that you will find a broader audience of people will be able to find elements they'll really, really like about the comics. So yeah, if you're coming at it and you're really into horror, then it's the book for you. If you're coming at it and you're really into thrillers, then it's still the book for you. Or if you really want a family drama, it's absolutely the book for you. So there's no, I think it's because it spans so much, it has kind of all that level of interest for people, hopefully, anyway.
So I like to know a little bit inside baseball when it comes to the comic book industry. I managed comic book stores for a long time, and I consider myself a comic book historian. So I always like to ask this question when I can. And since it's the three of you, you guys had so many options. Why did you choose Image? I mean, Ryan, you've worked with Boom and IDW. Noah, you've seen the industry from the outside. You have friends at Dark Horse. John, you've been everywhere. Why did you guys choose specifically Image? I mean, there is the obvious answer that it is Image, but was there something else that led you down that road?
I mean, just as from my perspective, they're the best. And that's not to dismiss anybody else. It's just that there's not many companies that let you do whatever you want to do. Like they really do. Like when we pitched this to Eric, he was like, yeah, this is great. Enjoy. Like, have fun. Like, they kind of let you, they say yes, and then they take their hands off the wheel, and they let you know when you need to have stuff in. But there's no. And I feel like when you're doing a book like this, that's good and bad, or it's a little bit of a higher wire act, because if you screw it up, it's also all on you. So I feel like that's part of it. And also just, you know, a little bit of the inside baseball of it all. Like, there is something really wonderful about them letting you own it and keep it and control it and stuff like that. And I think that's something that a lot of creatives are seeing more and more these days, where, you know, it's just like, it's so rare that the people who make something ever transitions into any other medium. It's nice to be able to be involved in that and not just been, you know, get an email or a text message every once in a while when something else is being decided over something you spent years crafting.
Yeah, I think from my end, having worked within the studio system so much in the world of feature films and television, to do a little project on the side where I was working in comics for the first time, I think part of the joy was to feel a little bit liberated from that kind of monolithic structure and have a little bit more autonomy over the piece of material we were creating. So that was one of the incentives for me to just to write the book to begin with, was just having a little bit of creative freedom in a you know, slightly different industry from what I'm used to, and in a slightly different way than what I'm used to. And of course, I've adapted in my sort of primary career writing film and TV. I've adapted a lot of comic books, and that was actually how I came to the medium in the first place and sort of fell in love with it. And all the books I was really responding to were, or most of the books I was responding to, my kind of gateway into the industry and into the medium, were all Image books. So this was it was really nice to kind of come full circle and do my first book at Image. And then, yeah, you know, if and when one day this does turn into something else or lives on in a different medium or something that Ryan and I decide we want to adapt, it'll be really, really nice to maintain that control of the IP. So another sort of just practical reason for it.
All right. Yeah, I was curious because when we got to read it early. I don't know. We didn't mention that at the top of the hour. We did get to read it already, and it's fantastic. But if I didn't know it was an Image book, because of how it blends all these genres and because it can fit in so many different categories, I could see it as a Boom title. I could see it as an IDW title, maybe with a little less nudity, but I could see it as a Vault title. So like it would fit pretty much anywhere. But of course you have the Image eye, you've had the Image. Ryan, I don't want to slam dunk on everyone else, but you are right. When it comes to independent books, Image really is the best. So thank you for entertaining my question, because I was really curious about that.
Sure.
Please don't cut that one little spot where it just says that Image is the best, and that's the old one.
And if you can loop it, we can.
Why is Ryan out of work? I can't imagine why. Yeah.
We did an interview. Image is better than everyone.
We did an interview with Terry Moore back when we used to edit these, and one of the questions was, who inspires you? And he's just like, no one. And just full stop. And then he's like, I'm kidding. And then actually did the interview. So we didn't cut that in, obviously, but yeah, we might just skip that.
Done. Ryan said Marvel sucks. I don't know why he said that. That's exactly. Crazy, Ryan. creative it definitely was, and I'm glad that we did get an opportunity to read it ahead of time. Sucks for everyone else who has to wait, but it's really awesome and it's amazing. It's really, really amazing. So that being said, I did explain the comic book to my mom today at dinner. And we went out, we had dinner, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm having the interview later on the Infernals. Actually, what's it about? I explained it, and I'll let you guys explain it, but I'll just let you know that she wasn't happy. She said, oh no, mijo. Oh no. Now I just want you to also know that she's a Christian woman, that when I told her what it was, wasn't very happy about the whole scenario.
I would give any amount of money to if your mother could come on the show right now and pitch it to everyone for us. That would be the most incredible.
We need a pull quote from your mom.
I want a blurb on the back that says, oh no, mijo, oh no. Like, that's all I need, like, on the back.
Yeah.
She was not a fan of the concept. But that being said, the Infernal synopsis for everyone, please.
The Infernals is about a guy named Abe Morgenstern, who is a septuagenarian sort of business titan of industry, who is also the son of Satan. So it's essentially the story of the grown-up Antichrist, who has just recently been diagnosed with terminal cancer and is confronting the fact that he is going to die, and now has to choose which of his three sort of troubled in different ways children he's going to leave the family business to. So essentially, which of his kids he's going to saddle with the burden or honor, depending on how you look at it, in their family, of destroying the world and sort of finishing his life's work. And it's about his relationship with his father, Satan, who he's never met and who he resents for sort of putting him on earth with this impossible, unimaginable task, and then also sort of orchestrating his demise in a way, because this is now a guy who knows he's going to die. So it really is a guy confronting mortality, confronting all of these big existential questions while his children go off and try to, he sort of sends his kids off to do this mission. It's a little bit nebulous in the first issue. We aren't really sure what it is. We kind of hint at it, but he sends his kids off to essentially test them to see who is best suited to take over the apocalypse. And what we'll find out as we go through the five issues, it's a five issue series for now, we'll find out that maybe the Antichrist has not been entirely honest with his children, and maybe he has a couple tricks up his sleeve. So that is largely a sort of bird's eye view synopsis. Guys, am I missing anything?
That's perfect.
So we do have a comment from PJ. He's one of our followers. Do you guys have any kids? If so, how does your personal experience weigh in on this project?
I don't think any of us do have kids. So maybe that's informed it in some, way.
Fathers are all the devil. So that's
we're children ourselves.
Yeah, no, I do. I do. If my personal experience informed this in any way, which I believe it did, my father had me when he was much older. He was 61 when I was born. I was the last of his five children, and the first three of whom were from a different marriage. And my dad was a sort of a big figure and an imposing force. And, he and I had a good relationship. And so I certainly don't view him as the Antichrist. But, I think this story, thank you. I think this story for me is really about what we do to try to please our parents, the lengths that we'll go to kind of get love from the people who brought us into this world, and certainly having an older father who was a little bit more detached from my upbringing, was in a different stage of his life, certainly informs particularly the character of Abe and where he is, and the specter of kind of death that all the kids are dealing with regarding their father. And there's in the fourth issue, I don't want to give too much away, but something that we'll do and that you'll see starting in the second issue is that we're going to shift perspectives. The narration in the first issue is all Abe. So it's all the patriarch. It's all the father. And then starting in the second issue, we're going to switch that narration and we're going to see it from the perspective of the children. And we're going to see each one of them kind of give their spin on this throughout the series. And when we hit the fourth issue, that's when the youngest child, who's B, who is still in school, gives her take on things. And we really get a sense of why she is sort of as apathetic and checked out as she is. And it's because, her entire life has been lived under the specter of death and the end of the world. And that has framed this kind of malaise that she's experiencing. And it's going to be a cool issue, I think, for sure. Anyway.
It's our commentary on the current generation. Yeah.
There you go. B is my favorite character right now in the introduction to the issue.
I'm glad.
Seems like our own Paneloids page is asking us a question.
Because the countdown has begun. The
statistics of a baby turning out to be the Antichrist asking for a friend.
What's it? One in,
I don't know,
17 billion or something?
One in, I think, 666 is probably, probably an accurate statistic.
I just want to say your synopsis was a lot more polished from what I told my mom. I didn't get that far with my mom. I said, it's a book about the son of the devil, and that's what started the oh no. I'm sure she just didn't understand what was happening.
Totally. I'm sure if she heard it from us, she'd be adding it to her pull list.
A quick aside, my father's a pretty religious guy as well, and he asked me, like, when I told him we were doing this, he's like, what's the book about? And I told him it's the Infernals, and I just gave him like a quick, like, well, it's about the Antichrist. And my dad goes, so wait, so let me just get this straight. So you wrote Rogue Son, which was about a kid whose dad was a superhero and he's the worst dad in the world, and now you're writing one about whose dad, who's the Antichrist? And he's like, do we need to have a long conversation, Ryan? I'm like, I'm just, writing from what I know.
At least he's checking in.
He is. God bless him. Yeah.
No pun intended there. So what inspired this story? Obviously, it isn't a direct connection to your own children because none of you have any. And to our knowledge and what you've said so far, neither of your fathers are the Antichrist. So what inspired this story directly?
I think the genesis of all of this was that Ryan and I had worked together in the past. We've written a movie together with my writing partner, who's I think maybe even with us tonight.
In spirit, or I'm joking.
Sorry. that sounded really strange.
I killed him.
This isn't a seance. I think he's in the. I think he's in the comments somewhere.
I think he's in the room.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So if you feel a strange presence, that's Aiden. But no, I mean, we'd worked together. We'd talked about doing a comic. We really wanted to find the right idea. So we'd been going back and forth for a year or two, you know, on just like a couple of log lines, a few like one sentence ideas, mostly coming from me to Ryan. And I could never really hook him into something. I just couldn't get him into the right idea. And then I was just sort of thinking about, I find that the best ideas come when you sort of revisit our character archetypes that are meaningful to you and sort of put them in a slightly different context, just imagine them from a slightly different angle. And I was thinking about, you know, I've always been interested in this character, or this concept, this sort of characterization of the Antichrist as a child, as a human child who's been brought into this world with this, you know, insane destructive power. And so I just revisited that archetype and said, okay, well, we've sort of seen variations of this theme, and we've seen this character a bit throughout their life, but we've never seen them at the end of their life. And we've never seen them as a patriarch, and we've never seen their family life and in you know, at really as a father. And so it very quickly just kind of clicked into this story about fathers and their children, and children and their fathers. Even when you're 80 years old, the most powerful person in the world, the relationship that you have with your father, you're still a child. You still feel like a child. And so I brought that sort of seed of an idea to Ryan. And for the first time, I got back an email with like real enthusiasm and excitement. And he was like, there's a ton here. And we literally just shot the shit for like 2 hours, and just like different layers of the world started, you know, revealing itself. And that's always when you know you kind of have the right idea. If it's something you want to continue to talk about and explore, you're onto something. And this fell into that category. So that's sort of the genesis.
Anything you want to add, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, he's being modest, but like, it was all the ideas he sent me were good, but this was the one I remember that when I got it, I was like, no one's done this? This feels like this has been done. We have, like, and then when I realized it hadn't really been done in this way, I was like, oh, then we have to. And I think I got excited about it just because I could see all the layers really quickly. I could see all the different characters. I could see the world. And whenever you get an idea that feels like it actually has more story than you're going to be able to fit into a 6-issue arc or a 12, you know what I mean? Like when you can see 20 issues and the world just to keep evolve, that's when I know those are the ideas. I'm like, okay, that there's enough there that we can really dig into. And I got really excited about, I remember there's like a one key element that's in the first issue that I loved, which was this idea that Abe never met his father, but other people have. And so they'll talk to him as like, oh, you know, your father and I are very close. And I just thought there was this like, that you could almost sense that like frustration and that anger. And I was like, I like that part. And there was like the, so like Noah said, like that idea of the mirror of Abe and his father, and then Abe as a son and Abe as a father, those two parallels I think are really interesting, because he's, you know, he can see the, what, you know, you don't want to, you become the thing that you hate sometimes. And like this idea that he could be hated by his children the way that he might hate his father, or loved by his children the way that he loves his father, I think is super interesting.
And as the series goes on, you'll see how that sort of power, that paternal power, influence, authority, is something that Abe continually sort of weaponizes or uses to his advantage with his children, as he's kind of, you know, as he's manipulating the chessboard. And that's something, again, that we just, as we were having these initial conversations, we just said, conceptually, watching the Antichrist interact with his children and what that must be like for all of them is incredibly powerful, and something that feels like it could run for, you know, for, like Ryan said, for there's way more than one arc here, and we're really excited, and we've already started thinking about it beyond. I will say that all of this was very much just sort of abstraction until we got John on board. I mean, I think it was really like these were concepts that we loved and characters that we loved, but we didn't, you never really know the shape or the form of it until you find the right artist. And John was the person, he was our first choice. He was really kind of our only choice. choice, and it was like, let's take a swing at this and see if we can make it work. And he was kind enough to agree. And as soon as we started getting that concept art back, this blend of like Baroque and contemporary and abstract, but also deeply visceral, and everything just kind of came together. The characters started making sense to us, and that was how this went from being just sort of shit that we talked about to being real characters on a page.
John, you've been awfully quiet. We're going to direct a little bit of attention your way.
Okay.
So with this issue that we've got to read so far, I don't want to spoil much, but there are 12 panels that I absolutely love, and it's those 12 panels with B. The way that those panels are laid out, I love when an artist can do that, just take a central piece and fill anything around it. So I'm not spoiling anything, but there's a great middle part. One of my questions is, at the very beginning of the book, there's a page that abstracts the very end of the book. And to not spoil anything, there are a lot of devilish creatures and a lot of heavenly creatures. What kind of research did you go into that? I know I saw Anubis and some other stuff that I recognized, but I also saw some stuff that I didn't recognize. Where did you draw inspiration from with those images in the beginning and the end of the book? And it's not a spoiler, because it's the end of the book is a twist, so you won't know what's coming. So
I mean, with those pages specifically, it was really important to have a broad range of cultural references for the demons and the angels, essentially. I think it's easy to fall to just a stereotypically Christian perspective with this stuff, but with the depictions from across cultures, it's key to get them in, just to show the global nature of all of this. And it's visually interesting as well. It's like, how many red horned guys can you draw before it gets tedious? But like the sculpt and variation in different depictions of similar characters across different cultures, it's just fascinating. So it's absolute pleasure to be able to do that. And likewise with angelic beings as well. I mean, everybody's familiar with the biblically accurate angels and all the stuff that it describes in the Bible that is just insane. So leaning into that a little bit more is really interesting for me. It's like, how weird can you get this stuff so it feels otherworldly? And I think that's a really important part of the art in general for this series, is it is, like we said at the start, it spans lots of different genres. It's a horror book, but it's also very familiar with a lot of the elements in there, and it's quite it's important for me to get across the communication and the emotions between the characters, as well as all the really fucking weird shit that we've got on there as well. So yeah, it's nice to be able to switch between the moments. So when you turn a page, it is just crazy, and it goes from quiet moment to just insanity.
In the beginning of the book, when I read it and I got to that demonic page and I saw all the different iconography, I was like, oh, that's really cool that they included so much. And then when you get to the end of, oh, okay, so this is what this means. Like, it did indefinitely increase the scope of it all. So that was really, really cool to see. And I just wanted your insight on that. So thank you.
I'm going to bring up my mom one more time.
She is our core demo, so that's great. This is exactly what we're aiming for.
My one saving grace for this book was the heavenly characters, because when I noticed my mom wasn't interested anymore, I was like, oh, but mom, there's heavenly characters, you know, like all the gods were in it. And she looked at me and she was like, oh, that's nice, but there's only one god. And I was like, yep, no, I'm this is not going to work. This is not going to work with my mom right now. Without spoilers, which is kind of difficult for this question, what should we expect in the next issues? Who wants to take it?
I touched on a little bit before, but what we should expect is this sort of broadening of the POV, right? Like, we should expect to see the story play out not just from Abe's perspective, but also from the perspective of kids. We're also going to do a cool thing where we sort of return at the top of each issue to what Abe said to his kids before they go off on this mission. And you'll see how those sort of contradict, you know, each other, and that what he said to one kid maybe doesn't match what he says to another kid. And you start to put together a little bit of the mystery of what he's really trying to get at and how how he's playing his children off of each other, which is super fun and is a fun little touchstone for us to start with. So yeah, you can more sort of broadening of the perspective. We'll get into this mission where we'll figure out what the kids are actually being sent to New York to do. And then, of course, unpacking what they're really being sent to do and how they're going to get there. And then we're going to just sort of keep building out the mythology of the various players who are involved, because we can kind of look at this as there's a power vacuum on Earth right now in the Antichrist business. And the Antichrist is dying. And so there is a power vacuum for who is going to take his spot. And as we introduce in the first issue, there are some other players who want to sort of vie for that position. And we're going to see those players team up and enlist the help of people we maybe wouldn't expect, or forces we maybe wouldn't expect. We might even see Abe's father come into it a little bit at some point. We're not going to see him per se, but we might feel his influence. So that'll be a fun thread to follow. And just building out the various forces that are at play and trying to kind of throw these kids off their game, and watching the kids try to sort of process what's going on on this mission and realize what their father's really sent them to do, as they are sort of caught between the forces of heaven and the forces of hell. And then when in regards to Abe, our central character, it's really the story still of him sort of confronting his death and having these things from his past come out of the woodwork to haunt him. So we may or may not meet his ex-wife and the mother of Nero and Jackal, his two eldest children, who also may or may not be a succubus. So
is that a spoiler? Did we just
that get a spoiler? It's a spoiler.
We're but, live. Anything can happen here, folks. Anything can happen.
We can redact that in the clips.
PJ Tattershall has, is the story all different perspectives on the same event, or is it a continuation of the story through the different perspectives for this first part?
The second one, yeah. It's a progression. It's not like one event and then each issue is a retelling of the event. It's just that we change the perspective as we move forward in the story, yeah.
Although it would be kind of cool to do a sort of Rashomon type thing at one point. Second arc, maybe we'll do it. We'll credit
make a note of that. Yeah.
John's job harder.
In five different art styles. Yeah.
Going back to John for a second, we loved you in Mindset and whatnot, and your coloring and art style in this is fantastic. You and Lola did a fantastic job. What was the inspiration behind the stylizing and the coloring of it all? Like, there are definitely some bright spots, there are definitely some dark spots, and even the darker moments of the book have a brighter light, and the lighter moments of the book can have like a darker light in a way, what we've seen so far in terms of shading and whatnot. So any insight onto that at all? Or
It's interesting you said that, because I think one of the key themes, I suppose, to the artwork is the play of light and dark and the use of shadows especially. So something I always tend to use is silhouettes. So I like the idea of the absence of something actually communicating more than there being something there. So this is the perfect story for that, when we're dealing with light and dark, good and evil, and these kind of broad themes. So I think, especially for the first issue, I was keen to almost play into stereotypes a little bit, just to set it up so it's something that can be kind of bent a little bit in future issues. So ideas that there's this kind of huge darkness there, so you see everything in these dark kind of vivid colors, and then you see kind of other characters maybe in this overwhelming brightness. But like you said, there's nuances even within that where the light and dark, it becomes a little bit more ambiguous throughout. And like I said at the start as well, I love Suspiria, I love Giallo, and I love that aesthetic where you have these really bright, lurid, surreal colors to artwork, and then it has that visceral feel to it where you can feel the emotion, you can feel the fear, you can feel the anger and the tension. So that, coupled with mixing styles a little bit, so it'll be something highly painted and then something a little bit sketchier and a little bit looser, And it's just based on the emotions of the characters and based on the storytelling. And the great thing about this story is it will switch between action-packed moments and then more kind of internal moments, and then just moments with, like, Satan. So it's, so it's all over the place, and it's so much fun for me because I think there's a lot of expectations in terms of the visuals that go along with that, so I can pick and choose what I play into and then what I maybe subvert a little bit based on the content. So it's great. And then Lola assisting on the artwork as well, absolutely fantastic to have her on board, kind of helping with the coloring, helping with the artwork, kind of helping across the board with everything. So it's so far absolute dream to work on this project.
Awesome.
I just gotta add, John, I love your art, man. Like, I really do. Like, between this mindset, like, it's so, like, it's you, like, and it just kudos to you and your art style. Really, it's really awesome. It just feels like a moving painting, like, the whole time, you know. So I love that. So let's get back in order again. So Ryan, we're gonna have you start now. All right, man, I don't know. Do you want to start? Do you want to be last on?
No, I don't know the question yet. That's a little harder. Yeah.
You know the curveball's coming. Yeah. He just doesn't know when to start.
All right, Ryan, get ready. Here you go. If you were the son of the devil and had all the power that goes along with it, what would you do? What would you get up to? Now, you can pass. You can move this along if you want to be last. It's up to you.
I can phone a friend. Yeah. What would I do? I think I would do what Abe do, which is, like, retire to Florida and just, like, own a giant mansion. And or no, I'd buy Paramount and then I'd retire to Florida. That's what I would do.
Are you saying the devil would buy Paramount?
I wish. As long as it doesn't merge with Warner Brothers or Universal, let's do it that way. Sorry.
No.
You wouldn't be the first demonic presence at a movie studio.
Sure. I don't know. I don't really have a good answer for that. I hope I wouldn't be as awful as Abe, but I don't really have a... What, you guys have a better answer than me? Because I don't have one.
I don't. I honestly, what it's giving me an idea.
Oh, no.
For a different story or a different element of the story. I'm just thinking, like, you know, you want to be able to say you would resist in some way, right? You'd want to stand up to your father. You'd want to... I mean, to be saddled with that, it's incomprehensible, right? Like, that's kind of the point. But there's a piece of me that thinks, well, I would run away. I would run away from my dad. I would get the hell out of there. I'd fake my death. I'd trick him. I'd trick him into thinking I didn't exist anymore. Get me off the hook for being responsible for the apocalypse. And now it's just got me thinking about an idea, or like thinking about what if Satan had more kids, right? What if there were other kids? What if there were ones who resisted? What if there were ones who went into some kind of witness protection? So, you guys have...
Kyle, we're going to cut that.
Yeah. So I'm just...
Save it, man!
I'm just... You got me going down a path.
Do you guys need a minute? We can go.
Noah's not allowed to be on live anymore. He's banned from being on live.
On the Ultra Arcs Bay.
But that... it's an interesting idea to think about how different people would react in different ways. I don't know if I have a great answer. I think what I would do is I would use my mind control to make you guys think I answered in a really smart, articulate way, and then I'd trick you into sending it over to John Pearson.
Without sounding completely insane, I would just bring about the apocalypse. Absolutely. I would.
Come on, tell us how you really feel. Go on.
I would go pure nihilistic. I'd just erase everything.
Are you a daddy's boy? Again. Like...
yeah, that's the subtext there. It's like, I'm an absolute daddy's boy. I'd erase everything. Yep. Start again.
I mean, we should at this point, to be honest.
Burn it all down.
On a lighter note.
I said this question, I immediately put everyone in shackles. Every single person on Earth was in shackles, like, immediately.
I know the part of it, like, I genuinely think I am a good person. I try to be a good person. But I know that if I had superpowers, I would be a villain. Like that. There wouldn't be hesitation in my eyes. So I feel you, John. I definitely feel you. Now, getting back outside of the perspective of the actual issue in itself, comics are an amazing genre, and there's a lot of collectors out there. And one of the things that a lot of collectors collect are variant covers. What artists would you like to see variant covers for this series? If you can each give us like one or two names going down the line. I mean, Ryan, you were on Teenage Mutant Turtles and Power Rangers that had, I want to say, 51 covers for those five issues. So
278. Yeah, insane. Dan Mora, let's have Dan Mora do a cover for this, would be absolutely insane, because I just think it'd be funny because that's just not at all his style.
Yeah.
It'd be like Abe just standing there heroically, like it would be really weird. So I think that'd be super fun. But we have some people, the ones that we have are absolutely, not to promote our stuff, like, but like,
oh, you will,
the ones that we have are amazing. Like the pinup ones that we've been putting out each day are some of the weirdest, craziest covers I've ever seen, and that was all Noah's idea.
Well, that's something I'd like. First off, dream cover, Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah.
I think we would, for this, is something that, you know, we would just love to see.
I got a Bill Sienkiewicz.
That's one that we've talked about, but it's unbelievable.
There we go.
Wow. Goddamn.
Yeah.
So cool. It's hard to say what the dream covers would be, because I think genuinely, largely through John and his connections, the people that we've had do the variants are our dream artists. And I think we've been really fortunate in that regard. And the variants that have come through are just like completely unreal and super cool. And again, going with this idea that like each issue is kind of themed with one of the characters, or like the POV from one of the children. So too are our variant covers kind of like themed after one of those characters. So we tried to find a person with a style that matched the sort of temperament or the personality of that character. And that's worked really great. And I think is something that'll be fun to share and fun for collectors. And then, yeah, when we were talking about how we wanted to promote this, you know, just an idea that we had was there's only so many variants you can do. At a certain point, there are diminishing returns, and there's only so much money in the budget. But we also really wanted to showcase some people who aren't kind of on the standard variant circuit, like who should be, people whose art we love, who work in indie comics, who some who are a little bit more off the beaten path, but some who are super established and well known, but just people whose aesthetic we really loved and would give us this sort of like kaleidoscopic set of imagery, like across the aesthetic spectrum to represent our book. And so we went to just a bunch of people who we love and said, hey, can we, you know, get you to do a pinup for us? And we've been releasing those on socials this last week to sort of help promote and also promote their work and get people to look at some of their stuff. And that's been a great joy for me, just seeing all of these different artists who I love doing their spin on Infernals. Yeah.
Jared Cody Wolf's pinup that we got yesterday is the great. Can I?
It's
like
incredible.
That's just like, oh. I'll release it later, but like it's just the, like,
yeah,
I was so like, good. What?
I feel like my favorite thing about the pinups and also like a couple of the covers is Ryan's reaction to them. We've just said, like, when one of the covers came in and you were just like, this book is crazy as hell.
Yeah, no, and Ryan always responds to emails and to texts with like with no punctuation, like not a lot of exclamation points, not a lot, like very deadpan, but you know exactly what he's thinking. And so he always responds. He's just like, this book is fuck crazy. Yeah. But it's awesome. The first one we released was from Lola, which was incredible. I mean, just like when that came through, it was like mind blowing. And we were like, this one has to, you know, this one has to sort of set the tone for us. And then we had Jenna Cha do one, which was just like, you know, so intricate and so kind of disturbing and intense and super, super cool. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with her work. It's awesome. That's another one I would plug is Black Stars Above from Vault that she and Lonnie Nadler did, which is awesome. And she and Lonnie also have a book called The Sickness, which is just like super disturbing, fun Americana body horror. So anyway, I could go on and on about these artists. I love everything that they've done.
John, is there anyone who you wish would adapt something that hasn't already, or someone that you're really looking forward to?
It's tricky with kind of like dream people who would like to be involved, because like everybody said, it's like we've got like a lot of them. I mean, like Sienkiewicz obviously would be somebody that would be fantastic. I think that's something we all agree on. But yeah, I think one of the best parts about kind of getting in touch and getting people to do all the pinups is just like how weird and how out there they are for them. So like Jared's is absolutely insane. Jared actually did two. I don't think you've seen the other one. Yeah, he did one. It's like, oh, I've done another one. Pick which one you like best. And it's like, they're both just like,
oh man, crazy. Awesome.
But yeah,
I think that email as, oh man,
that's literally what it did. Yeah.
But yeah, like also just giving more of a spotlight to some kind of new creators. So there's somebody that we've got involved called Flo Woolley, who is one of the students that I taught, who's like graduated this year, and it's absolutely sensational. So just things like that, like giving people an opportunity to do really interesting and cool work and get people to see it. I think,
but you don't have a favorite student at all, right?
Well, I mean, what? Laura was also one of my like graduating students, so yeah.
I'm surprised you guys didn't get Peach Momoko on this. Oh, she's on everything.
Yep.
she's taking over the market.
Yeah. I tried at the con. The line was too long to reach her. I couldn't get to her. Yeah. 3 hour long.
So guys, I'm gonna go with John here. All right, so let's put this into the universe, right? That's all we're putting into the universe. This book just got picked up by a studio for a movie or a TV deal. Up to you, really, what you want to do with it. Who's playing Abraham Morgenstern and his children? We want all of them. Fan cast.
So it's it's such a difficult question, because obviously I've been drawing all of them, so they feel so personal. So it's really difficult to then.
You can phone in a friend here if you want.
No, I was actually having a think about this. So like, I think for Abe, if it could be anybody alive or dead, I would say it would have to be William Burroughs for Abe. But I feel like Beamus Burroughs is dead. I'd maybe say Werner Herzog or even Jodorowsky to play Abe.
Oh my God. Warner Herzog doing all my children come to me at this most terrible hour.
Yeah, we have to make a little tweak to incorporate the accent, but
yeah. Exactly.
Jackal, maybe somebody like Colin Farrell might be good for Jackal.
He could do anything, so yeah, he definitely could do Jackal.
Nero, Jason Statham, maybe.
Now, when I saw this question, there's only one person I had in mind for B, and I want to see if you pull her out.
So there's two people. I think B, maybe Bella Ramsey, but also Emma Mackey, bit old, but like I feel like Emma Mackey might be good as B. But I think B is probably the hardest one, because B's a tough one. Yeah.
It's Aubrey Plaza.
I mean,
B's supposed to be like 14 though.
Yeah.
That's
what I mean. It's like, I'm glad that I don't know a lot of 14-year-old names of actors. Like, true. I'm happy. That's a good thing that I can't name B. I've got 27 names now.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think when we were first coming up with the comps, because things have evolved, and John's right. Like, now all I see is what's on the page. But when we were first coming up with Abe, we wrote him he was supposed to be very distinguished and very intimidating, and he was supposed to be this big sort of patriarch force of fatherhood. And so we thought of him as Jeremy Irons. That's who we were thinking of. Yeah. Initially, and just with these sort of the intensity of his eyes and the intensity of his expression, because Jeremy Irons is sort of notorious for just having this like cold, severe gaze. I was thinking a lot about John Malkovich is somebody who I think is perfect, just in terms of the intimidation factor. I think somebody in that age range also, I think it'd be really effective to see him playing that role. We talked about David Harbour for Nero, who is Hopper from Stranger Things.
Yeah, also was Hellboy and Red Guardian.
And was Hellboy. And because with Nero, we wanted it to be somebody who has this kind of bulky physicality, who has this kind of intensity to them, that is sort of physical presence. Jackal is probably your movie star casting. You know what I mean? Like your big star casting. I think PJ says, I feel like Adam Driver gets casted somewhere. I think that's exactly right. He's like perfect for Jackal.
He's big. That man can play anything.
Yeah. He's a chameleon.
The one man show. Just Adam Driver, all four characters.
Yeah. Gyllenhaal for Jake Gyllenhaal for Jackal, I think is, you know, falls into that category. And then, yeah, I wouldn't know on B. I mean, I think that, you know, we obviously based her a bit on Wednesday Addams. Like there was a degree of that. I think certainly Aubrey Plaza's kind of affect has made its way into B for sure. Yeah, Ryan, anybody else?
The only thing I thought would be fun is I was like, just to mess with the West Wing fans, let's just make Martin Sheen Abe Morgenstern.
I mean, I love West Wing and I love that idea.
I think that would be a cool flip. He goes from being Bartlett to the Antichrist.
Ryan, you know who else I was thinking about? Because I was thinking about him for Nero because it's bananas. But then I also thought maybe for Abe is Mickey Rourke.
Oh, God.
He could be Abe easy.
He could easily be it. And I didn't realize he's in his 70s now. Yeah. Mickey Rourke is in his 70s.
He'd be like, can I have like a parrot that's on my shoulder at all times?
Which, of course you can, man.
Do I have to have the nails?
Let's go. Yeah. The sort of volatility, right? Like, I think is an important component there.
So we're getting towards the end here. Final plug. Release date is next week?
No.
Okay.
FOC, I think is.
FOC is next week. I knew one of them was.
FOC is the 20 is the 22nd. So yeah. FOC is the 22nd, and then the release date is Valentine's Day. Yeah. So we're February 14th.
What a great day to
perfect gift for your mom for Valentine's Day.
Bring your loved one down to the comic shop. Yeah.
Oh no, no.
No, mijo.
So go to your local comic book stores and have them order. They've got about a little more than a week to get it on there for FOC, and then it's going to be monthly, correct? We're getting an issue in March and April, and
yep.
Well, any other projects you guys would like to mention? Anything you're working on that you can hint at?
Rogue Sun, still working on that. Issue 19 comes out soon-ish. No, 18's coming out. I'm working on 19. I can't remember which one it was. Star Trek, the end of my Star Trek Scorpius run came out today. So that's in comic stores. If you want to check that out, the whole thing, so now you can read the whole thing through. And I have a issue. I'm coming back to Power Rangers for one issue. I'm doing a Mighty Morphin, the Morphin Masters double size for the Darkest Hour event. So that's all my stuff presently, and might have some announcements in the next week.
Yeah, from my end, most of my feature work I'm unfortunately not able to talk about. There are a couple comic adaptations coming from me that hopefully will have announced in the next 12 months or so. A couple of TV projects that I think I wouldn't be surprised to see a bigger announcement coming in the next couple months from me and my writing partner, and a couple we've been working with a few directors who we love on various projects. So it's been an exciting couple of years. Obviously, we got kind of waylaid by the strike last year. I was out of work for 5 months, but hitting the ground running this year, and hopefully there will be some more to announce. And then one day this adaptation of one of John's books, I can't wait to tell people about, because that's been in the works for a couple of years now.
Mainly this is what I'm working on.
Extensively.
The
bane of being an artist. You only get to draw one thing.
Yeah,
I know. We're like, I got 15 more issues to draw.
These writers just like, yeah, this just is an issue, is an issue, is an issue. But yeah, there's a couple of like shorts that I've kind of done previously that are coming out this year. There's one that's Jared Cody Wolf, who like Ryan showed the kind of pin up with. So he put together a fanzine, kind of like a short anthology called Spring Special, that me and Laura actually collaborated on, a bootleg Toxic Avengers short story.
Oh, that's awful.
And yeah, so that's like coming out this week, I think. And there's loads of like crazy stuff in there. And yeah, there's a few other things that I can't mention at the minute, but yeah, it's mainly this, like 98% this. Because it takes me quite a while to do all the artwork, as you might be able to tell. Yeah.
Lloyd Kaufman almost ran over me with his car, not on one, but two occasions. But that's a story for another day.
Where I feel like I've heard that story a lot from different people as well.
Like, I've seen him drive three times, and I would never get in a car with that man. Because he almost hit me twice. But anyways, where can
I think you're safer in the car then.
Yeah, true, maybe. Where can we follow you to hear all these announcements? So plug your socials, please. Ryan, down the line.
I'm predominantly on Twitter, that Ryan Parrott, two R's, two T's. That's pretty much who I'm. I'm on Instagram occasionally when I remember to check it. So.
And I'm only on Twitter. I'm at Noah G. Gardner.
I'm on pretty much everything at John J. Pearson. And you can support me on Patreon, where I have little updates and little peeks behind the curtain for Infernals and other stuff as well. So yeah, come find me.
Well, guys, I just want to say thanks for being here. As I said, this is our first live interview, so we appreciate you being the test subject.
You guys nailed Infernals, it. Awesome.
It's been great. The Infernals is great. We can't wait for issue two. Everyone call your shop, pre-order right now. Just call them. It's late here, right? They're probably closed, but call them anyways. Leave a message. I don't know.
Break in, and, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. You say that. My LCS got broken in last week.
Yeah, Infernals FOC, that was the only way they could do it.
They knew about it. They were excited. Good for them. Thanks again, guys. And just with that, Paneloids comic book live stream, baby.
Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Did you enjoy our latest podcast episode? Well, guess what? It's not just audio, it's a live stream. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube for an interactive experience. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on TikTok for even more fun content. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. Again, that's Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube. See you there.